Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on day 10 of the US Open, part one, coming to you from the Billie Jean King National Tennis Centre, from the media restaurant. That is the hubbub you hear, and we're in the media restaurant just as we were yesterday because somehow, David, it got hotter.
It did get hotter, and again, I think, look, I don't like these conditions at all either, and I'm not running around in them. I know you really get affected by them even more than me. But it's looking at the players that is the tell that this is kind of as bad as I've experienced here, because players that don't normally get their performances affected are getting them affected, and that happened again today, and it's horrible.
Yeah, I know some of you listening are probably thinking, stop banging on about how hot it is, you know, people sitting in, or there's actually a heat wave back home in the UK, isn't there? But, you know, I'm sure people listening to this somewhere are sitting in miserable weather thinking, stop complaining about the heat. But honestly, the conditions are so brutal. There is sort of no corner of this tournament it doesn't feel like they're affecting. It really is infiltrating every aspect, I think. And I know this tournament is defined, and quite happily defined, by its brutal conditions. The fact it's the last Grand Slam of the season, it is a real sort of last man and woman standing vibe, and I like that about it in general. It does feel like the cruelty element might be being taken a little bit far during this heat wave. I mean, hearing, I know it's Daniil Medvedev, so you take it with a little pinch of salt, but hearing players talk about death on court isn't necessarily a relaxing viewing experience, and you can feel the discomfort in the air, obviously for the players who are having to do exhausting physical activity, but the crowds as well, the vibe out there today, and hopefully it's different for the night session, just as it was last night, thanks to I almost said Blake Shelton. I've been getting it right all tournament. It's creeping back in again, thanks to Ben Shelton and slightly less so Francis Tiafoe. So I hope there's a slightly different vibe to report on in part two, but it's weird, Matt. It's a weird vibe.
It's very weird. I'd go further than that and say it's deeply uncomfortable to watch a lot of these matches. And honestly, the Medvedev quote, a player's going to die and soon they're going to see, yes, that's Daniil Medvedev.
Sounds like a Springsteen lyric, doesn't it?
It sounds like potentially a quote of the age that, like, we'll be looking back on in a few years. And honestly, like, the world has a climate crisis, so tennis has a climate crisis. And I think we're not far off questions having to be asked about whether actually tennis can be played in conditions like we saw today, and it's going to get worse. You know, temperatures are rising, and in 5-10 years time we're going to be playing in even hotter conditions than this, and it could be unsafe. And I think there are things that tennis potentially needs to look at, because nobody wants this on a regular basis.
Yeah, just because they can, and look, they just about can at the moment doesn't necessarily mean they should. And nobody wants to remove the physical endurance element from the sport. But I worry about what this is taking out of these players longer term and how it might impact the quality of the remainder of the tournament. I mean, this is killing these guys.
Well, we may get an insight in the second men's match just to see physically what Zverev's able to put out after what happened to him two nights ago and the state he looked in. It does remind me, it's probably 10 years ago, it's coming up to 10 years ago when we had the hottest Australian Open run of days that I can remember, where it was low to mid 40 degrees Celsius in about four successive days, and that was the story of that tournament. And I remember Maria Sharapova walking around looking just delirious on the court, and it was so distressing to see her like that. And actually, the tournament doctor, I think it was, came out, or maybe the ITF's medical practitioner at the time, came out and interviewed on BBC Radio and said that humans evolved with antelope on the plains of Africa, and he was saying all this, and they took all this this heat then, and they're used to it, and there's not going to be any tragedy. Okay, fine. Well, he got shouted down at the time, but you know, this, it's the humidity element here, I think, that separates it. But we should remember that the rules started to change in Australia after that, and the heat rule came in where they would suspend matches on outside courts. They would bring the roof over if it reached a certain wet bulb globe temperature with the heat and humidity combined. And you know, they've moved the roof over to the last couple of days to create shadow and shade. And I think that is sensible. And they're probably going to have to evolve a heat policy in the same way, I think, as has been done in Australia in the end.
And I'd sooner rather than later, because it's as Matt says, only going in one direction. We all know where this is going, and you don't want to see something terrible happen before we end up at
like
the inevitable destination.
The discomfort of people sitting watching it, you know, it's horrible for them.
Yeah, and media sitting covering it. Let's cover the Medvedev Rublev match. Straight sets, extremely strange. Slightly strange in ways that I wasn't quite expecting. Far more breaks of serve. I mean, I'm trying to work out why the heat, why these conditions seem to be leading to so many breaks of what are usually impenetrable serves. I know Medvedev is having serving issues, but I mean, we're seeing sets of men's tennis between big hitters that are just exchanging of breaks, but like a relay being handed back and forth, and it's pretty bizarre.
I felt like Medvedev gave us a little insight into that in his on-court interview. He said, after a while, I couldn't see the ball. I was just sort of, I mean, not literally, obviously you could see it to hit it, but he couldn't really focus. I think he was walking around, he looked like he was in a daze, really. And so both of them did. And that's this sort of delirious state these players seem to get into. He said, I was just running back and forth, chasing the ball, but I think a kind of ability to focus and think goes when they're that impacted by the heat.
He said, the only good thing I see in these conditions is that we both suffer. That's Daniil Medvedev talking about the godfather to his daughter there. but I get it. You know, he means it's a level playing field. He was very quick to talk about Tokyo, wasn't he?
Yes, he was asked if they were the worst conditions he's ever played in today, and he said, well, joint with Tokyo. That was a scarring experience for him at the Olympics a couple of years ago. I mean, it was a strange match. Rublev had leads in all the sets, didn't he? He came out firing. Rublev won the first 10 points, 3 love up in that set.
That was weird.
Yeah.
If you'd have said to me any scenario, that is the one I would not have come up with.
Yeah. Then 3-1 up in the second set, 4-2 up in the third set, and he lost all of these sets. And I think that as Pam Shriver, just I think she just blew us a kiss.
She did just blow us a kiss.
What was I saying? Rublev was a breakup in all the sets.
Several leads.
But wasn't able to convert any of them. And I think speaks to an underlying mental edge that Medvedev has in this matchup. Like, I think even when he was down in the score, he knew that he could come back against Rublev, and Rublev knew that Medvedev would probably come back as well. And that was kind of the sense I got in this match. I never trusted Rublev in any of those leads.
Which is strange, given that he's beaten Medvedev, and he's beaten Medvedev quite recently, and he's beaten Medvedev on a hard court. Like, I felt exactly the same. He's clearly in his head. But that's more about the weird and wonderful place that is Andrei Rublev's head rather than any actual reality of their matchup, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a bad matchup for Rublev. Like, I think Medvedev feels comfortable in it. Rublev has to stretch to his limits, pretty much, to be able to keep up with Medvedev.
But it's not Monfils Djokovic, is it?
No, but it was a Grand Slam quarterfinal, and that's a whole other thing that's also lodged in Rublev's head.
He's 0-9 now, Rublev in Grand Slam finals.
First man ever to lose his first 9 Grand Slam quarterfinals.
Will he ever win one?
No. Would he ever? I mean, no, I suppose if he can avoid playing these players,
he has had very tough draws.
He'll
there was
keep
one,
getting to them. I think
there was one he lost to Cilic at the French Open.
He might reach a semi-final.
That was one that got away.
I don't see him ever reaching a final.
You don't think it could be the sort of thing where once he finally gets over that hurdle? I'm playing devil's advocate because I don't either.
Perfectly fair question. It's the right question to ask. I feel bad saying it, and he's made progress this year, winning Monte Carlo, you know, beating Medvedev a couple of times, but at the Grand Slams, I mean, that one against Cilic was the one, probably, you know, in a final set tiebreak, should have won that. And I just watching him today just trying to heave through the defense of Medvedev, who is clearly short of his physical best because of these conditions, and still losing in straight sets, I just don't see it.
There was a point in the match where Daniil Medvedev removed his shirt, shoes and socks. So he was just sat there like he was on a French beach with a towel round his neck, legs outstretched. It was a very relatable scene. He had the doctor out twice, receiving an inhaler. The second time the doctor came out, or the trainer perhaps, she gave him really strict instructions about how to take the inhaler with a little bit of edge in her voice.
Well, because the first
time... You didn't
do
it right the first time.
The first time, he got it all wrong.
Right. Did you watch it happen?
Yes.
She said, you've got to actually inhale as you're pressing.
Yeah.
He didn't press and inhale at the same time anyway.
He was like, it is helping, though.
He gives himself 10 out of 10 for the tournament so far, does Daniil Medvedev. Going back to the Chris O'Connell match in round 2. So tough scene for Attila Balázs in round 1, who he absolutely crushed for the loss of 3 games, I think. But yeah, he says 10 out of 10 since round 2. Maybe that's a mind game, knowing he's probably got to face his bogeyman next and he can't afford to give any kind of edge away ahead of that match.
I'm still really worried about his serve. I know I've been banging on about it all tournament, but 9 double faults today, and some at some crucial times. Like, trust that.
It's like he watched
serve.
Ben Shelton last night. Well, which we know he did watch Ben Shelton
on
last night
on
a pirate website, because he did back-to-back double faults, didn't he? It's a new thing,
and he needs that serve. That underlines his game. It's the shot around which his game is built, because it's such a good serve when it's firing. And it allows him to race through service games, which can be useful for sort of applying pressure.
And preservation.
And exactly, preservation. And I'm just... That shot, I think, needs to be ticking and firing if he's going to beat the, you know, Alcaraz and Djokovic, really. Without that, I'd give him such a slim chance. Now, maybe he can find it in the semi-final. I do think the rest of his game's been been good, a lot better than it had been building up to the tournament. Although kind of hard to judge his last two matches just because they were so defined by the conditions they were played in. And, you know, it was against Dimonor, it was all about taking his legs away. And against Rublev, it was all about the sort of mental battle out there, as well as the physical one, of course. So, I don't know. I'm glad that Medvedev thinks he's playing so well. As you said, it could be a mind game, but that serve, I think, needs to be firing on a level that it hasn't fired at for a few months now.
Did you have any more fun, David, commentating on this than you were fearing?
Yes, I did, because we had... I think actually, funny enough, the heat made it kind of interesting watching them deal with it, and we were picking up things Medvedev was saying in the corner there through the microphones, and we had Kim Clijsters and Jeff Tarango, who were great conversationalists, and it was just interesting to get their insight. But there is still a metronomic sameness to the rallies, and that still applies. They're admirable, those two, but put them up against each other, and it is pretty dull. Mm.
Naomi Osaka was sat courtside watching this with her mum. She's been in the house today. She took part in a panel about mental health alongside multiple swimming gold medalist Michael Phelps. And she's given a few interviews, which... give us cause for great excitement, because she's talking confidently about how she's going to come back in at the start of 2024 in Australia. She's intending to play a full schedule of tournaments straight away. She's going to be making a coaching announcement soon. She says there'll be a coach joining the team soon. She even she took some questions after that panel took place in the press conference room just along from here. She even was talking about how she's started to look at Serena and Venus and the longevity of their career, and she can see that for herself. She said, you know, in the early days of her career, she never ever thought she would be that kind of player, playing deep into her 30s, but neither did Serena or Venus, famously, and yeah. She now seems to have a completely different perspective on it all, and goodness me, that makes me excited.
Oh yeah. And it was finally lovely to see her. I went into the press conference where she was having that mental health discussion with Michael Phelps up at the in the panel, and I thought both of them spoke so well. I found that really uplifting that they are showing their vulnerabilities and sharing their experiences for people to realise that it's okay to talk to people and it will help. And I loved that. And I didn't know she'd done interviews afterwards. And that does. I really hope the best for her, on a personal level, a human level. Don't know her, but I hope the best for her and for the sport of tennis. She would be such a boost. Oof. She gives so much to the sport if she's happy and playing. And contributing, competing. She's just such an amazing watch, and I think she means a lot to the sport. I think she's a really... There's so many people that can get behind her and want to support her and relate to her. And I hope this is a comeback. I hope she can make it all work.
Mm. Yeah, I even got excited just in that press conference. The first question she was asked, she answered it with, honestly, for me, and I was like, we're back.
Yeah, thank you, Naomi. You've given us a lot to look forward to, and you've given me the opportunity to say that if you would like to travel to Australia to see Naomi Osaka play in the Australian Open, AO Travel can sort you out. Of course, the Tennis Podcast throughout this fortnight is brought to you in partnership with AO Travel. They operate the travel program for the first Grand Slam of the year, the Australian Open in Melbourne, where Naomi Osaka intends to play her first Grand Slam back. AO Travel take care of your flights, premium accommodation, tickets to the tournament, behind-the-scenes experiences, and those experiences include the all-new AO Travel Lounge. And it is to celebrate the launch of that lounge that one very lucky Tennis Podcast listener will be winning an AO Travel premium lounge package for themselves and a friend to go to the Australian Open in style in January. Two economy flights to Melbourne, tickets to the Rod Laver Arena over the middle weekend, three nights accommodation at the five-star Pullman on the Park Hotel, as well as two-day access to the luxurious AO Travel Lounge. You can enter the prize draw today by clicking the link provided in your show notes. You have until Monday, the 18th of September at 11:59 p.m. New York time to enter, and terms and conditions apply. Very best of luck. Now, on to the first match of the day that we saw in the Arthur Ashe Stadium. 6-1, 6-4 for new world number one, Aryna Sabalenka over Zheng Xinwen. This was her fifth consecutive Grand Slam quarterfinal, and she's only played six in total. I say only, I mean five of the six have now come consecutively. She's never lost one. It's incredible how consistency, David, has become such a pillar of Aryna Sabalenka's career.
Yeah, it is. It's a lovely point of difference from the sort of before and after becoming a Grand Slam champion. And yet we still have these question marks over what happens when she's in the semi-final. And we're going to get to find out. But I do find it impressive. I like the fact that a world number one knows she is going to be crowned, and what does she do? Steps up and gives a performance like that, helped by an opponent who's still pretty erratic, I think, and doesn't know what to do against the pace when it's coming at her like that. One of them was secure, one of them wasn't, but she's such a pro, Sabalenka. She's a real professional player. She turns up and she just knows what she's doing, and she executes. I mean, yes, she sometimes gets wobbles that have derailed her, but I love the fact that she just keeps turning up at the latter stages of these big tournaments. It's great for the game.
Mm. Yeah, I think interesting that consistency has become such a defining feature of her, and also showing up in majors. Like, again, talking about Naomi Osaka, interesting that Naomi Osaka will be coming sort of back into a tennis world where Sabalenka is a Grand Slam force, because she wasn't really only a couple of years ago. Okay, I know she reached a couple of semi-finals in 2021, but that was the start of it. There was a time in Sabalenka's career, quite a long time, where she would constantly lose in the second, third, fourth round of slams. And I always think of her match against Osaka at the US Open here, which I think was in the fourth round in 2018.
Sabalenka had won Newhaven, hadn't she, coming in, and was hot.
Right, and everyone was sort of circling that match as, okay, the winner of this could go on to win the title. And of course, Osaka did win. She did go on to win the title, and she became the player who always shows up in majors, and Sabalenka was having her more success on the tour. And yeah, Sabalenka has turned herself into a player who, well, she's reached the semi-finals of all four majors this year, which is such a hard thing to do. And yeah, today I think completely agree with David. It was amazing the way she was rushing Zheng Xinwen. Like, Zheng Xinwen, it was almost as though she'd never experienced anything like that before. How is this ball getting to me so quickly? And it took her a set to even start feeling the ball on her racket. And she did quite well at the start of the second set, Zheng Xinwen, to make it close, but Sabalenka was in control. She said that, you know, she trains in Florida, so she loves these conditions. And yeah, just a very, very dominant performance and a very, very dominant tournament so far. But again, as David said, it feels all about the semi-final for Sabalenka. Mm. That is the hurdle that, yes, she's got over once. All due respect to Magda Linette, it was Magda Linette, and that was a calibre of opponent that was lower than some of the ones that she's lost, and will be lower than whoever she meets in the semi-final. She's going to be facing either a Grand Slam finalist in Keys or a Grand Slam champion in Vondrosheva. So
she's for sure hoping Keys wins that match tonight, right?
I think if Vondrosheva's fit enough, and people have been saying she's been serving okay, absolutely, because Vondrosheva fully fit is a blooming nightmare for so many players. But, you know, she could just beat everybody again. You know, she's done it once when I certainly wouldn't have thought she would. And now that she's won one as well, yeah.
Six Grand Slam quarterfinals so far in Sabalenka's career, and she's never lost one. She's won all six of them, which obviously is an incredible record. ESPN put this into a graphic, and on that same graphic was Chris Evert, who won her first 48 Grand Slam quarterfinals. 48. I've been processing this all day. I can't. I'm sure frequenters of the Wimbledon Library probably know that stat
did we ever have that stat?
Probably.
Can you remember, Matt?
I've definitely heard that stat before. I mean, I think it actually came up at Wimbledon, where
at Wimbledon,
where Sabalenka reached the semi-final and had won her first five Grand Slam quarterfinals. Oh, because okay. I think that was quite an impressive achievement as well. And, you know, she's getting there. She's slowly working her way up.
Only 40 to go.
I mean, honestly, I cannot.
Sorry, David. 42. 45.
Okay.
No, 40. 40 42, no, right? That was terrible math.
Come on, guys.
Between us, we were almost right.
I mean, yeah, I can't think of another stat where there's such an outlier.
You know, like outrageous.
Even Nadal's 14 French Opens, which, you know, is, I think, the tennis achievement of all tennis achievements. Like,
that's about to diss it.
Someone's closer to that than they are to this.
In relative terms, yeah. What about Nadal's consecutive weeks in the top 10?
Hasn't Martina got more?
Oh, crikey.
Matt's all over Nadal.
I think. Hasn't Martina got, like, I think she's got the most, hasn't she?
Wowza.
Probably.
Sounds right. Mm. Yeah.
Dissing Nadal. I didn't mean to.
No.
Didn't think that's where this podcast
Matt
would be
Nadal's
going.
Shade.
Just quickly, last question on Jung today. Obviously, you know, I get it. That was her first Grand Slam quarterfinal. She is facing the sort of opponent that takes some getting used to. There's no shame in being manhandled by Aryna Sabalenka. But she does have a glaring weakness in her game, a glaring technical weakness. Do you expect Zheng Xinwen, who has a cracking coach in a corner in Wim Fisset, knows what he's doing, knows how to make champions, do you think she's going to come back from the off-season next year in Australia, where you can go to with AO Travel, if you like, with a new service motion or an adjusted service motion?
Yeah, I tell you where it gives me hope that it is possible. I mean, I think Sabalenka's a great example, for a start, the way she managed to eradicate the double fault. So, had you told me 2 years ago, when she was having to serve underarm because she couldn't get the serve in, I would probably have said no.
But that she didn't actually change that much technically. She developed the yips on the serve, really. I know she says she employed a biomechanist and all of this, and I'm sure there's changes she's made which are less perceptible to my untrained eye, but we're talking about a whole different category of change required for Zheng, I think.
The other one I would have hope for based on is Djokovic, because he's changed it dramatically under Goran and various other coaches. I mean, he's really worked on it. I mean, it's been a long period of time, I suppose, to get to where it is for the last 3 or 4 years. Do have to bear in mind he's just a heck of a lot more talented than the vast majority of players, and maybe she doesn't have the ability to properly learn a new technique that is reliable and one of those that is repeatable no matter what the conditions and stress levels and so forth. I mean, I don't know enough to be able to confidently answer that, but I do think Wim Fisset is a very good coach, and I hope that she takes enough time in the off-season. I hope there is enough time to properly try and do something rather than just trying to cram more events in or something, you know, which a lot of players do. I'm not completely convinced how good she is yet, because I don't feel like I've seen her in enough conditions yet. This was a good run, and I think we get some information out of that, but would like to see much more of her. But I actually, something Kim Clijsters said today in our commentary was, now she's tasted what it is like, both at that level of a tournament and that facing that level of an opponent who peaks for a Grand Slam, somebody like Sabalenka, it's easier maybe to establish what the bare minimum needs to be to combat that. And something Jose Higueras was saying in commentary last night during the Shelton-Tiafoe match is, he said, when Shelton was knocking these serves down like crazy, he said, players get used to pace quite quickly. They can adapt. If it's coming to them that fast, and you said after a set, Zheng was starting to get to a few of them, and they can handle that. It's the other elements of the game that being moved around, hitting the spots, those are often the harder bits. But so it's a good start, isn't it, I think, for her. Not that confident though that she will be a relevant force.
No, you don't sound it.
I don't feel it. I don't feel like I know her enough as a player. And I do feel like if somebody's talking about a hitch and a serve at this stage, that's a concern.
While we're on serves and hitches in serves, I've just been reminded of a conversation I had the other day with Louisa Thomas, the freelance writer, who had recently done a profile on a baseball player about the yips. And she was saying the sort of conclusion from that profile and all the conversations she's had with people in sport is that you don't ever fully get over the yips. Like, they are always there and you are always managing it. And they might come back at any possible time. Which perhaps sounds a bit scary for Aryna Sabalenka's future, you know, that, but also makes me think even more just how impressive it is that she's managed to become so consistent and perform so well at big levels, because it's quite possible that she's sort of having to do things to manage them and we might not even know about it at the moment. She's sort of quashing them, but they're there, like those demons are
so
sort of
fascinating
lurking.
And checks out, actually, thinking about my experience on the Champions Tour, seeing players in the lowest possible stakes situations imaginable with their old demons manifesting themselves. I've watched Gaston Gaudio underarm serve at this random tournament in Colombia. I thought, what am I doing with my life? A few other headlines for you from the day session. Coco Gauff and Jessica Pegula are out of the women's doubles. They lost in three sets to the reigning Roland Garros champions, Wang Jianyu and Shay Su Wei. They will play Gabby Dabrowski and Erin Routliffe, who won yesterday. So, revenge of sorts for Laura Siegmund, who's gone a round further than Coco Gauff in the women's doubles. I'm reaching here, but you get what I'm doing. I'm just comforting myself because we've been denied the rematch. But Siegmund and her partner Vera Zvonareva beat Victoria Azarenka and Beatriz Haddad-Meier to make it through to the semi-finals. They will face Jenny Brady and some player Luisa Stefani. So Vera Zvonareva
could still be a
US Open champion, Matt. And in the mixed doubles, the semi-finals are currently on court, and they are, the one currently on is Ina Shibahara and Matej Pavic against Anna Danilina and Harry Heliovara, and it is Danilina and Heliovara that are currently a set up. The other semi-final is Taylor Townsend and Blake Shelton. No, oh god.
This is it. You've got the yips on that name, and you've quashed them for 6 months,
yes.
But they're back.
So good, Matt. Thank you. It is Taylor Townsend and Ben Shelton against Jessica Pegula and Austin Krajicek.
So proud of you for the last 6 months of coming over those yips.
And now the last 4 seconds, because you got it right that time.
Yeah. Austin Krajicek's going to be the new men's doubles world number one on Monday, isn't he?
Yes, that was yesterday's stat in the newsletter, that all four number one positions are changing on Monday. It was the first time, that's ever happened. Yeah, thanks to lots of good people at the WTA and ATP for confirming that was the first time ever. Yeah.
Amazing stat. So that's what's going on. Let you know what happens in those mixed doubles matches and anything else significant around and about in part two. We'll also, of course, wrap up the last two singles matches of the day on the Arthur Ashe Stadium, Marketa Vondrousova against Madison Keys for the chance to take on Aryna Sabalenka, and Carlos Alcaraz against Alexander Zverev for the chance to face Daniil Medvedev. We'll see you in a few moments.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Welcome back to part two, where, as per usual, we are back at Tennis Podcast Towers, and very much not as per usual. It's pre-midnight. It is a mere 11:55 p.m. Thank you to the genius of Carlos Alcaraz. 6-3, 6-2, 6-4 tonight over Alexander Zverev, who, of course, was physically depleted after his exploits against Jannik Sinner 2 nights ago. But, frankly, I don't think Carlos Alcaraz played all that well tonight, and he was just a different class.
Yeah. I mean, if there is any depletion in Alexander Zverev, which I think there was, it is offset by the fact that Carlos Alcaraz was well short of his best, and yet you're still seeing the chasm that exists between the two. And it's long been known, I think, really, because one of them's got two Grand Slam titles at the age of 20 and the other one hasn't got any at all. And look, when you see them play one another, Zverev's a really good player. He's really good, and he hits the ball blooming hard, and he moves incredibly well for his size, and he's got this big serve. But Alcaraz is playing a different sport when he's really on. Simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? There were so many points this evening where I feel like we all had a Carlos Alcaraz experience. You know, there were lots of moments in there. But a match as a whole, it wasn't anywhere near what he's capable of, really. I thought his forehand was all over the place today, and he never seemed to get the strike quite right or the timing on it quite right. It coughed up a lot of unforced errors.
Nearly 20 unforced errors just on that wing.
Right, wow. The backhand was great. He was really solid on that shot, and actually we really noticed how he was stepping in on the second serve return with the backhand and taking it early, and that was, you know, winning him a lot of points. And he played well when he needed to. He saved all the break points he faced. He took all the break points that he had, accelerated away at the end of the first set, winning the last 8 points of that. And there was lots of lots of little fun moments in there. And by the end, he was drop shotting Zverev a lot more and coming forward. It was, I think, a fine performance overall, but not at the level that we're kind of used to seeing from Carlos Alcaraz. And yet it was still just way too good for whatever Zverev had left.
Yeah, I mean, I almost think, gosh, what great timing to get a subpar performance out of the way, because he is a streakier player than a Novak Djokovic. I think, I mean, Djokovic does tend to warm up his way into slams. He rolls through the gears, but it's rare that he'll go up and down, I think, throughout a slam, whereas Carlos Alcaraz does. You know, he'll go up and down more throughout a match. He's a looser player. He will... I can't quite remember which one of his opponents it was this week. It was one of his early rounds opponents describing the challenge of... comparing the challenge of facing Alcaraz to facing Djokovic. And he said, you can convince yourself that you're more in it against Alcaraz because he's just a different type of player. He's taking a lot more risks.
I think that was Evans.
Right. You're getting more from him, but actually you're not more in it. Because he's always, it's always within his power to knuckle down and turn it on when he needs to. But that, I did find that an interesting kind of mental comparison. It felt like that tonight, you know, looking at the stats, there's not much to choose between them. Same number of unforced errors, handful more winners for Alcaraz. Alcaraz actually covered more distance between, more distance during each point. But there was a chasm. The stats just don't tell you what it felt like to watch that match, which was that there was an absolute chasm between the two of them.
I think as well, the backhand that Matt's referring to is, it feels new for this year to me. So it feels new even for the last few months. I felt like he was doing that in the Wimbledon final in the last couple of rounds. Suddenly he's developed this shot where he can reliably middle it off of 130 mile an hour serve and move forwards at the same time, and I think we're just getting started. That's the thing that you talk about, these the ups and downs, which absolutely are there. I think in 2 or 3 years' time he won't be doing that as much.
It's part of the 40% that Juan Carlos Ferreira thought was missing from Carlos Alcaraz's game.
It led to some lovely reminiscing about the Sabre, didn't it, earlier on evening at Tennis Podcast Towers. We really look back fondly on the 2015 Roger Federer Sabre debut.
Sneak attack by Roger. The one where he starts running towards the service line before the serve's even been hit.
Half-volleying Kevin Anderson's serve in Cincinnati.
I remember that so vividly. Kevin Anderson, who at that point hadn't had the best results of his career. I mainly, at that point, just thought of him as a big server. And there Roger Federer was, half-volleying his only weapon.
And then, do you remember, and then he sort of stopped doing it? He kind of did it for a year or two.
I think the US Open final against Djokovic killed it. Yeah, I do. That final killed it.
Because he tried it a number of times in that final, and every time Djokovic was wise to it and ended up winning the point. And then he put it away, really, didn't he? He didn't really use it again so much in his career.
Bit of a shame.
Yeah,
but it's being revived.
Kyrgios gave it a bit of a run for a while as well. But I don't know, the way Alcaraz just starts galloping towards it as if he's hunting prey. Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah, and probably playing Zverev not bad preparation for playing Medvedev in terms of taking advantage of the court position. I mean, I always say this with Alcaraz and Medvedev. I just, unless Alcaraz has a horrible day, I can't see Medvedev getting the better of that matchup. And he was asked about Alcaraz in his press conference today. At this point, he didn't know he definitely would be playing Carlos Alcaraz, but he didn't bother with the whole, well, we don't know if I'll be playing Carlos Alcaraz thing. I think firstly because he's got no particular love for Alexander Zverev, has he? So there's no reason for him to feel generous. And also he's just, you know, he's pretty straightforward with these things. And he was asked about how he'd set on the court, and we discussed this earlier, that he'd rate himself 10 out of 10. And he said, yeah, I'll need to be 11 out of 10 against Carlos. And he said, look, I'll just need to be extra precise and hit the baseline with my ground strokes and serve brilliantly. And yes, he will need to do all those things. But I think this sport is about matchups. And I think if Alcaraz is at all at the races, even if he does those things, it doesn't work. And maybe Medvedev does have a new game plan to trial against Alcaraz, and he just didn't want to tell us about it in press, and that would be completely understandable, if not advisable. I certainly hope he does, because I don't want to see the match that I saw at Wimbledon and the match that I saw at Indian Wells. I don't want to see it again.
I was shocked by how much their match at Wimbledon looked like their match at Indian Wells. Mm. Like Indian Wells made sense to me. A high bouncing court that's slow. Alcaraz was able to push Medvedev off and take advantage of all the space.
It wasn't a hard court, and Daniil is a specialist.
Exactly. This is a hard court. And Medvedev is very, very good at the US Open. You know, we know that. So I think the conditions here suit him the best out of their three matches that they've had this year. And honestly, if Alcaraz plays like he did tonight, that might be a level of Alcaraz that Medvedev can make closer, I think. I still think there's a huge matchup problem, as you said. But if Alcaraz plays like that, I think Medvedev pushes him. I don't think he wins.
Is he likely to twice in a row, though?
No, probably not. Mm. But I think there were little glimmers of hope there for Medvedev in that Alcaraz performance tonight.
I tend to think that Medvedev's ball is easier for Alcaraz to just hit than Zverev's is, because Zverev really does.
Big.
He hits the ball incredibly hard, Zverev. Mm. And so I just feel as though he'll get more opportunity to do the stuff he wants
it's
to
so
do.
It's so easy for him to hit the drop shot off the Medvedev ground stroke, seemingly, isn't it? Look, we've got tomorrow evening when we'll mostly be talking about the women's semi-finals, but we'll also have opportunity to look ahead to the men's semi-finals, so won't deep dive on it too much. But I am going to turn the tables on you, Matt, because you asked me a sticky question earlier on. I'm going to put it back to you.
On the pod.
Who has a better chance in their respective semi-finals, Ben Shelton or Daniil Medvedev? Who would you be less surprised to see in Sunday's men's final?
I would be less surprised to see Daniil Medvedev in the final.
David?
Same.
I think it's more likely that Alcaraz doesn't play at his level and Medvedev can live with him than it is Shelton has a level over five sets to beat Novak Djokovic in a Grand Slam semi-final.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Okay.
I think it's maybe more likely that Shelton scares Djokovic in a set and makes it fun, and actually Alcaraz beats Medvedev in three. I think maybe those are the most likely, but in terms of actually winning, I think it's the opposite.
I think that's
a very coherent answer.
I think Shelton rocks Djokovic a few times, if you want to put it in sort of boxing parlance. I think he absolutely nails him a couple of times and has him wobbling. You know, one of those crisis moments that Djokovic is an absolute master at weathering.
Mm.
I think he has a couple of those, with the crowd giving it to him and him getting upset, probably a set going, the whole place is up. It looks like the upset's on, but actually, no, that Djokovic is just regrouping and doing what he does.
Very, very plausible scenarios. All right, I've bought into that. Madison Keys is a three-time US Open semi-finalist. She beat Marketa Vondroušová tonight 6-1, 6-4 to set up a meeting with Aryna Sabalenka in tomorrow night. Tonight, as most of you are listening to this semi-final, and I have an apology to make to Madison Keys. I keep underestimating her. I both within matches and outside of matches. Yeah, I don't give her enough credit. I was waiting for her to blink in this match. There was that game in the second set where she faced how many break points?
Nine.
Wow.
No, well, she saved 9 break points in the match.
I think there were about five.
Five in the game.
I think it was about five in that one game. Yeah. And she really saved most of them.
Yeah.
She really did step up and raise herself, raise her level. And I'm so impressed with how she did that. There were a couple of dodgy moments. She missed the easiest overhead, the sort of overhead that pros just don't miss, and there was another dodgy backhand into the net, wasn't there? And you're thinking, well, I was thinking, sorry, I don't want to drag you two into my apology, I was thinking, oh, this is it, this is the moment that all the demons and all the baggage and the lack of fangs, this is the moment that all comes to bear. And it didn't, and I'm so pleased for her. I did not see this coming, and good luck to her.
Yeah, I mean, you've got plenty of years of evidence to make you feel like that, and understandably so, I feel, and that makes her achievement all the more impressive, because she's got to deal with that, and she just managed to fight through it against a very tricky player who doesn't look 100% fit, but even so, is still a Wimbledon champion and is still an absolute nightmare to play against, and particularly for a player like Keys, who is occasionally just making some really bad choices and coming in on a chip backhand to the forehand of Andreeva and getting past. But by and large, the most impressive thing was that she was hitting hard, but within herself. She wasn't flailing away and it balls spraying all over the shop. She was playing like the player that you always thought, or I always thought, she would eventually develop into from this audacious ball striker. And it's kind of never really happened to the degree I thought it could and should. So who knows? You know, maybe this, you know, it's never too late to try again. And maybe this is just the moment it all comes together for her. Who knows?
Yeah, I was really, really impressed tonight. Just a flawless first set, won the big points in the second set. Is it possible that, like, we still haven't seen the thing that we've been waiting to see from her? Like, I don't know. Have you gone too early with your apology, is what I'm saying? Because, like, she has reached a lot of
Grand Slam semifinals. Well, I do think she's going to lose tomorrow, if that's your question.
I just don't know whether we've seen anything from Madison Keys this tournament that we haven't seen before. I take the point about there was a bit more control about the game tonight, and it looked really good. And she's
a blooming tough opponent.
Yes, but one who I don't think was all there. And that's it. If Keys is really pushed and she comes through it, that to me will be a point of huge difference.
I draw a lot of parallels in my mind between Madison Keys and Grigor Dimitrov. We know about the ball striking. We know how. I bet she's awesome in practice. Absolutely awesome. That sweet, sweet ball strike. You find out what they're about in terms of, you know, winning slams, in terms of the real sharp end of things when they're under pressure. And there were moments tonight when she was under pressure, those 5 break points saved, she showed us something there. But consistently throughout a match, these last 2 wins, we haven't seen anything like the pressure that Aryna Sabalenka is going to put her under, unless Sabalenka's semi-finals all over the place.
That record is so interesting, because I hadn't really landed with me that the one time she's got over it was against a player who is just really a surprising semi-finalist. I'd forgotten it was Magda Linet. All I can remember is Sabalenka against Rybakina that's the Australian Open memory I have. So to me, that was all upside. And I know that might sound really rude to Magda Linet. I don't intend that, because she played brilliantly to get to the semi-finals, but it's a great draw, really, compared to what it could be. And all the others, she's lost. So it is fascinating to think now we get another semi-final, another big test for Sabalenka. World number one now, and this is a great test.
Mm. Absolutely. I can't wait for it. It's absolutely fascinating. And it does mean, by the way, they shouted this out on ESPN earlier, that's three black Americans of the eight singles semi-finalists. That is the Williams sisters' legacy right there. Not exclusively. There have been other extremely trailblazing black players over the years, but none as prominent and trailblazing as Venus, and even more so Serena Williams. And it's just so uplifting to see the legacy before your eyes, isn't it? In the Arthur Ashe Stadium. It's quite something.
Yeah, it is. And I think probably even more so now, because it's only recently that Serena stopped playing. And you get to look back and realise just how long they kept their careers, and that example and that opportunity for people to follow in footsteps with. I mean, it's two decades worth of tennis and more in Venus's case. That is really something.
And you had Clervy and Gounou sitting there watching Madison Keys tonight. That's the next generation coming up behind her. Lindsay Davenport was sat there watching Madison Keys as well. She's not an official coach, but she's still very much a mentor. Her official coach is her fiancé? Bjorn,
yes.
Fratangelo.
That's right, yep.
I am getting a bit frustrated with the amount of narrative there is around the men behind the successful women. Mm. I'm finding it a bit infantilizing.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I mean, look, I've talked about Brad Gilbert as much as anybody, but I think I am going to stop now because I am fed up.
Yeah, I think generally too much credit ends up getting given to coaches as part of a narrative generally, and most, the vast, vast majority of all the coaches are men, including in the women's game. So you do get that. And it's... I do think sometimes we probably should take the lead from the players who in Coco Gauff's case is telling her coach to stop talking and also doing the complete opposite. And then Madison Keys today is saying, frankly, I couldn't hear shit what he was saying.
it's a great
line. And listen, and I'm not trying to do him down as a coach either, because, you know, she's in the semi-finals, he's part of the team and all the rest of them. But I do quite like the moment when the women just slightly slap that down a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's happening in these semi-finals then? Matt's gone for Mukova in the newsletter. Sorry, I know I'm not supposed to give away the newsletter positions. You're supposed to sign up in order to get that info. Yeah. But that's just a little tease.
And also because we haven't said how many sets.
Yes. No.
That's
I
in
think
there.
It's direct retaliation for Brad Gilbert claiming that Coco Gauff does not know who Bruce Springsteen is.
I wondered why he went there.
You know, that's two members of the backhand list.
Yeah.
Who don't know who Bruce Springsteen is.
It's a tough scene for Matt.
I suppose people contain multitudes, don't they?
Yeah, we've got to be grown-ups about this.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't. It's his list. He can be every bit, as childish as he likes about it. So, what do you think, Matt? Who are our finalists?
Oh, I'll go with Mukova, as I have done
clear,
in the newsletter.
We do not know whether Karolina Mukova, Aryna Sabalenka, and Madison Keys know who Bruce Springsteen is.
I feel quite comfortable about Mukova. She travels with a guitar. She likes music.
I'm pretty confident about Sabalenka. I think she could belt out some of his stuff very well.
Oh, I'm less confident. We'll do some hard-hitting journalism tomorrow, Matt, and find out.
Arena, first question, but you know who?
Genuinely not ruling it out. Sorry, Matt. On to the serious stuff.
It's hard. It is hard because Sabalenka's semi-final record, as David has just laid out, is lodged in my head there.
What's the number?
One win, six defeats, or five? Five, I think.
Five, yeah.
And the nature of those defeats has been so similar. You know, it's been sort of on her racket and then an implosion, really, a flurry of unforced errors in so many of them.
Mukova being one of them.
Exactly.
Leila Fernandez.
Yeah, those two were the worst. But I, having said that, I will go with Aryna Sabalenka. And yeah, I don't know, I'll just go with Mukova. I think Mukova's just such a classy player, and I thought she was brilliant yesterday, was that, against Kostea? And we were talking, weren't we, about the influence of the crowd and whether that will get to Mukova, and we sort of all concluded no. Like, we think she's got a great temperament. I think Coco Gauff will have, obviously, a huge amount of support, but I don't see it being really hostile and a difficult sort of atmosphere to play in.
Agreed.
I think it will be just very positive for Coco Gauff, but I don't think Mukova is going to be, you know, Laura Siegmunding it up there and getting them all on their no. on her back, you know. And so I think she'll be able to play her game. And Gauff has played a lot of three set matches in this tournament. Like, there's been opportunities for her opponents. So I could look. It's a bit of a coin flip, really. I think it's so even, but I'll just give the edge to Mukova, but I've been wrong a lot.
David?
I'm going Gauff against Sabalenka in the final, and I think there are no limits on what Karolina Mukova is capable of doing. But I think that Gauff, in this environment, will scrap and be inspired and find a way.
In the mixed doubles, Danilina and Heliovara did go on to win their semi-final against Shibahara and Pavic. And in the final, they will face Jessica Begula and new men's doubles number one, Austin Krajicek. They beat Taylor Townsend and Ben Shelton. I saw some reports from that match that Ben Shelton was not holding back. 10-3 in the match tiebreak, Pegula and Krajicek won. So, yeah, that'll be the mixed doubles final. Tomorrow, you can probably imagine what's happening tomorrow, but I'll confirm it for you anyway. Coco Gauff and Karolina Mukova, first semi-final at 7 p.m, followed by Madison Keys and Aryna Sabalenka. You've got men's doubles semi-finals, Bopana and Ebden against Hebert Mahu first on Armstrong at midday. Then Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury against Ivan Dodig and Austin Krajicek. So Krajicek's on for the doubles double. You've got wheelchair men's doubles action, Sanada and Houdet against Hewitt and Reed. That is also on Armstrong. You've got some junior boys, Lerner Tien. I feel like he's someone we know something about. We'll try and learn more about him for when we cover the boys and girls in more detail later in the week. I can hear Matt googling, but we'll save it, Matt. Right, that's your lot for today, except for the formalities. People stay for the formalities, don't they? Hello to Willow, our lovely, lovely US Open mascot. Hello, Willow. I must put a picture of you on Instagram. That is going on my to-do list for tomorrow. We have our mascots. David, you've got Maisie.
All right, Maisie, and thanks very much for the birthday wishes.
Maisie went early with the birthday wishes.
I got an email. I got an email and a photo.
It is now officially your birthday, David. Hey. I mean, it's been your birthday in England for 5 hours, but...
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you, David.
Thank you very much.
We won't do an Alcaraz / Djokovic and sing to you on a live broadcast or non-live broadcast. I have got Xenia. Hello, Xenia. And Matt has got Darwin.
Hello, Darwin. Points today.
Points today for Darwin. Hasn't been able to say that too many times this fortnight.
This year.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Clough. She's been struggling in the heat wave in London, Billie Jean. Still about 15 degrees cooler than it is here, but thinking of you, Billie Jean. We have our executive producers and top folks, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And Matt, we have shout outs.
We have Andres in Dallas, Texas.
Like Gomez.
Andres Gomez.
Exactly.
All right, Andres.
Hello, Andres.
In Dallas. You see? You get singing.
Dallas now makes me think of all the angry people that, when I was promoting the WTA Finals going to Dallas last year, informed me that Fort Worth is absolutely not the same place as Dallas.
People were kicking off.
It was a whole thing.
You two didn't know that theme tune I just hummed, did you?
Well, I assumed, well, I assumed the it Dallas was Dallas. Theme tune.
But only assumed. You didn't know.
No.
No. See, loads of listeners are still humming along now who do know.
Thank you, Andres.
Am I, in your mind, what Coco Gauff is to me now? And not knowing Bruce Springsteen, are you as disappointed in me?
No, I'm not.
Dallas and Bruce Springsteen are not cultural equivalents, Matt.
Dallas hasn't really had much of a mention for the last 40 years in most people's world.
By the way, best wishes to Bruce Springsteen. He's had to cancel all his September shows. He's not very well. So we're thinking of Bruce.
Extra shout out to
yeah,
Bruce.
Sorry.
He'll appreciate it.
We've also...
Imagine if he slid into our DMs and said thanks for the shout out. No, mustn't dream of that. A dream is a lie if it don't come true. As you were, Matt.
Sorry. Alison Lemaire is our next shout out.
We've had Alison Lemaire before, haven't we?
Yes. Alison is living in New York City but missing London, where we raised our children.
Aww.
New York's pretty good, to be fair, Alison.
Alison Lemaire, spelt like the sea? Lemaire?
No.
Oh.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about Alison, spelt like the sea.
Me too.
No. Lemaire, L-E and then M-A-I-R-E.
Okay. Mm. Like the mayor of London. Like the French mayor of
yes.
London. Like the mayor of Bordeaux.
Toulouse, yeah.
Yeah.
Alison, like
we
Ruth.
Got there. Hello, Alison, and thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Alison.
And finally, we have Chris Capocella, who is in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, Chris.
Like sensation Chris O'Connell, and who played Daniel Medvedev into form.
I'm so delighted that we've got a Seattle resident on my birthday. Seahawks fan, maybe?
Maybe. Well, what we do know is that he is lucky enough to have completed the Fan Grand Slam.
Good work, Chris.
Which is one of my favourite things.
That's some effort, isn't it, to do the Fan Grand Slam? Yeah, congratulations, Chris. Thanks for your shout-out. Thanks for being a friend of the pod. We're approaching the end days of the US Open 2023, and if you're worried about post-US Open withdrawal, then becoming a friend is the best way to deal with that, because we have Bocco. That's what Bocco's for, guys.
What's that again?
Bonus content.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone knows by now, David.
My mum's still shaking her head.
The link to become a friend is in our show notes, as always, as is the link to subscribe to the newsletter. And also you'll find the details for how to enter that extraordinary AO travel competition. We have four more of these to come. Tomorrow is a special David Law birthday pod. We'll speak to you then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.